Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's it with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. How the devil are you? On quite a drizzly Thursday, really. But hey, look, it's towards the end of another week, which means we have another episode. Now, usually on people's birthdays, you know, we see friends and family, we get together, we celebrate, we give presents, we receive presents. That's not happening this year. Oh, sorry, it's my birthday. Shh, don't tell anybody. Usually you receive the presents on your birthday, but on this day, I am giving you a present, a shiny, freshly cooked, brand new episode of the Two Shot Podcast. And it couldn't be more perfect, if I'm honest. And look, this is nothing to do with me. This is to do with my guest. Now, two things. If you're feeling blue, we're having a bit of a bad day or bad week, let's face it, we've all had a bad year, but enough of that. This is the episode you need in your life. I hadn't met this person before. It's Callum Scott-Howells, by the way. Now, if you've seen the extraordinary Russell T Davies drama, It's a Sin, for me, Callum's character, Colin, was the beating heart of that show. And I know poor producer Griff, who's just finished watching it, it broke his little heart, it did. See what you've done, Russell? You broke poor producer Griff's heart. Yeah, he really was. And I got in touch with a few people, made a few calls, and he agreed to come on. Now, the reason why you're going to love it is his extraordinary enthusiasm, energy, lust for life. He is exactly what we all need. He's so lovely, so funny, he's so excited, he's just like, I mean, I kind of hate when people say, oh, you know, if we should bottle that up and you could sell it. I hate that, but you know, I don't really know what else to say. If you could bottle what he has, we'd all be richer for it, and hopefully you'll be richer after this episode. It's a lovely, lovely chat, and you'll get to know a bit more about Callum. He's what we all need right now. I have a sneaking suspicion you're going to absolutely love it. First, before we go to that, parish notices, everybody. Everybody gather round, sit down. I want to say a massive thank you to each and every one of you. I know some people started listening from last week, so you've got a lot of catching up to do. A massive thank you to Roy. The response has been overwhelming. You know, like I've always said, I've said it from the start years ago, there will be some people you know, some people you recognise, and some people you don't. This was one of those that maybe only a select few from the Northwest, and you know, more specifically Liverpool, would have known. Certainly those that have been to the Violet Nights would have recognised Roy's work. But yeah, the response has been extraordinary. And Roy, we've been texting on a daily basis, and he's been sending me certain messages and emails that he's received because of that episode. And, you know, I touched on it slightly last week. If you're concerned about someone, then, you know, sometimes people just, they don't want to listen, right? Maybe just send them that episode. What harm can that do? Just say, just give it a listen. We've got nothing to lose, because some of the messages that Roy's been sending me, it's obvious that his honesty with his story has really touched the nerve with a few people, and it is helping to change. I'm not saying that Jesus' podcast episode changed lives, but it's, you know, it struck a chord with people, and I think that's really important. And, you know, all we can do is sit down and have these conversations, and hopefully they'll get listened to by the right people. Do you think? I think so. Right. Enough of this. let's get on bringing some sunshine to a drizzly Thursday in the shape of the extraordinary Callum Scott-Owles. Enjoy, and I shall see you at the end.
Ah, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
I'm getting used to it. Slowly, but it's been tricky. How are you, mate?
I'm really good. Your podcast is so special. It's like nothing. I feel really like, thank you so much for asking me to come on here. Like I've got so many friends who listen to your podcast. It's just amazing. It's so special.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, look, this is not about me or the podcast. This is about you. First off, thanks so much for coming on and doing this, because I'm sure you're probably inundated with, you know, requests for interviews and things at the moment.
No, I mean, it's really nice, and it's like nothing I've ever experienced in my life. Do you know what I mean? I've never experienced anything like this ever. So I'm still trying to, like, navigate it all, really, Craig. You know what I mean? There was no way I was ever going to not do this, like, flipping heck. Like, it's amazing. I feel so... I feel honoured in a way, you know what I mean? But, like, in the sense that, like, you know, there's things that, like, you really want to do because you really want to do it, and then there's also things that, like, maybe can wait a bit, do you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, like, I think it's about, like, staying true to the show as well, do you know what I mean? Because the show is so...
Yeah.
The show always comes first, not us as actors or us as artists. Like, the show, we've all said, like, always has to come first. So it's always to make sure the show stays in the best light and there's no negative things around it. Do you know what I mean? Because that would be awful. Do you know what I mean?
But of course, but it's been received, you know, with such warmth and open arms, and it's sort of rocked and devastated everybody. But it's, I think what it also has done, and obviously it's down to you, you know, committing to that story and Russell's script, is giving people a bit of knowledge. Sometimes there's things that get blurred in the past and they can't quite remember it as it was.
Completely, absolutely. This is it though. And you know, I think there's that for the people who are trying to remember things that and it's quite blurred, but also for my generation who knows nothing. Like, I genuinely knew nothing. I thought I knew loads, but turns out I know fuck all, really. Like, it's just, you know, because, like, actually the true extent of it when you delve into it is horrific. Like, it's up there for me with, like, you know, dramas like Chernobyl.
Yeah.
You know, Chernobyl was, like, something really horrific, right? You watch it and you go, fuck, like, you look at these people and what they went through, like, with all that stuff that went on. You know, I watched that drama completely, like, hooked. I was literally, like, every single episode, I was, like, you know, my jaw was on the floor. And, you know, for me, like, I'm not saying It's a Sin is similar to Chernobyl because they're extremely different, but in terms of, like, knowing a little bit about a subject matter, you know, I knew a little bit about Chernobyl, and then watching Chernobyl and seeing the true extent of what happened, you know, I think I had a similar experience filming It's a Sin and, like, delving into it all. I found it, like, just mad. But, you know, you have, like, the politics, which is, like, painfully awful, and then also you've got just the extent of which the disease, like, takes over the human body, like, you know what I mean? So you've got these two things that are just both, like, equally horrific but extremely different, but just, you know, it took me a while to, like, sort of digest a lot of the stuff, really, I guess.
No, I bet. I mean, as you know, with the podcast, I tend not to focus on work, but it's really hard not to kick this off about this, because when I was watching it, your character, Colin, for me, was like the beating heart of the whole series. I just completely connected with him. It was such a beautifully written character, but it was so expertly
played off the page by yourself. I thought, congratulations, oh, really, is what I'm going to say. I don't want to embarrass you too much with gushing praise.
Please don't.
Please do. But honestly, mate, congratulations. It was just beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
How did you feel when you first read that part? Could you see a bit of yourself in the character? Was it one of those immediate?
You know what? It's really interesting because I think, yeah, I think I definitely saw this role as a role that I could give it a good go, at least. You know what I mean? Definitely not. I never think that I can do something the best because I think that, gosh, I think that's such a toxic way of thinking. I never think like that. I look at things and I just think I really would love to play it. Like, and I think Colin was one of those where I just thought, oh, you know, if I could really give this a go, I'd love to just give it my all. And I think it was the first time I've ever sort of completely immersed myself in something. And I think, I give it a good go, Craig. You know what I mean? And I think, and it was just so fun. It just felt so fun, and I felt so sort of liberated after playing Colin, because I was just like, this is just so fun. Like, you know, playing this character that is so resonating with not just me. There's so many of my friends. I know so many Colins. You know what I mean? So I think it's about doing it for them, and also, I guess, Russell's friends. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, because Colin is a person who has basically Colin's story, but also Colin is a lot of people. So I guess, yeah, I just wanted to really do it for them. You know what I mean, Craig? I think. You know what I mean?
And there's just such a beautiful, wide-eyed innocence to him that we all know a Colin.
Yeah,
we've all been a Colin.
Yeah,
which was that. I think that's why he connects with people so deeply.
Completely.
And truthfully.
Even right. So like after, oh gosh, like I really don't want to sound like a wanker, you, Craig. Right. So please, everyone, I just want everyone to know this now. I don't want to sound like a wanker, but I've got to say it because, you know, I'm on your podcast. I really love your podcast. I've got to say it. Basically, after the show aired, we all had a call from Elton John. It was just crazy.
No.
Yeah. It was mad. And one of the things Elton said, he said, you know, I was a Colin once. Do you know what I mean? And he's saying exactly what you said now. Like, we've all been a Colin. Like, and I think if Elton John was a Colin, you know what I mean? I feel like we've all been a Colin. Do you know what I mean? I think it's so interesting that you say that because, yeah, like, at one point we're all, like, wide-eyed, naive and don't know a lot about the, you know, the world or how to live in a big city and all that kind of stuff, especially if we don't come from a big city. Flipping heck, it's... I never came from London. You know, I grew up in the Valley, so going to London, I completely got it, you know. It's a mad city to move to, you know. I remember going there and being like, fuck, this is so different to home, completely different.
Well, I felt like that when I moved down when I was 17 from Blackpool.
Yeah,
and it's a real change from, like, you know, the seaside town to the big... I mean, I remember when I first got on the tube... I got off the train at Euston and it was like crazy and really busy and the pace of life is just completely different. And I got on the tube with my suitcases and I'd never been on the tube before. And you know, there's a lull. It lulls you to sleep. So it rocked me to sleep and I ended up at Heathrow, completely the other end of where I was supposed to be.
That was tactical, Craig. You wanted to go on holidays. That's where it was.
Well, there was obviously something telling me to get out of London anyway. I finally did do that. But let's go back. Let's talk about growing up in the valleys. Whereabouts in the valleys?
So I live in Tonerevel in the Rhondda Valley, but I grew up really in Treorchy. I went to comprehensive school. So I went to primary school up the hill from me, which was nice, and I loved my primary school. I have a lot of lovely memories there. But really, I sort of completely, like, I just remember growing up so quickly in Treorchy. There was just something about it just that clicked for me. I loved it. I found like my passion, I guess, which was like performing. And I guess I just really enjoyed, there was opportunities up in Treorchy, whereas in Tonerevel, I just feel like at the time I was growing up, there wasn't as much. There's not a theatre here. So I had to go further up the valley, which is actually interesting, isn't it? I had to go further into the valleys to for more opportunities, which is mad. And you just go, what? Really, normally you go further in the valley to work on a mine. That's what you did. but I guess in this instance, you know, I went up to Tjoki and there was just loads of Amdram. Amdram is so many people's outlets up in Tjoki, and yeah, there was like there's like literally something like there's like gosh, there must be like 4 or 5 like societies, which is amazing. It's a really small area. It's not a big area. You've got 2 theatres and you've got 4 or 5 societies that do shows, which I think is pretty cool. Do you know what I mean?
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, when I was growing up, there was only 2.
Really?
There was that one side, the edge of St Anne's near Blackpool, and then the other side, which is sort of going towards Preston. Mm. But so obviously there's a passion for it. There's a need if there's like 5 of them.
I think, you know what? I think it gives people, you know, because obviously like people in Amdram, we do it because we enjoy it. You know, we don't do it because we want to, you know, even me, when I first did it, I didn't expect to do it professionally. So I really was just doing it because I enjoyed it. And that's why everyone does it. So I think it's that way of like, say you work, you work 9 to 5 in an office job, and then in the evenings you get to go with this play to this community hall, you get to go to this rugby club, this church or whatever, yeah, and you get to just sing and dance and be good at...
But they need an outlet. That guy that works in the bank who you see needs an outlet on a Thursday night to go and just have a dance and sing and let it all out.
And I think that's what's so special is that... Yeah, okay, you might not want to do a prop. You might don't want to go to London and work in doing the West End or go and be in films and all that kind of stuff. You just do it because you love it and you need an outlet. And I think that's why I still love it. I could easily tomorrow go... I was thinking this last night, actually. Tomorrow, I could easily go back to Selsig and go and do Rock of Ages and literally go and have a laugh with all my friends, because there's just something, I can't quite think of a word to describe it, but there's just something so special about amateur dramatics that is just, you'll never get anywhere else. Like, you'll only get it where you come from and where you've done it. And I think that's why it's always going to be like, it's always going to exist. Because you just create memories. Yeah. It's just memories that will always last a lifetime. Do you know what I mean?
And because people are doing it for the right reasons. They're doing it because they really love it. They don't have to go. No one's forcing them to go. They're going because they really love it. And you can't really give that to anybody. That's just in
completely.
Them. And it's really, that's really lovely. It's a really, and I also think it's really healthy.
Yeah.
And I think it's really healthy for you saying that, taking that sort of raw passion into your professional life. Because if you can keep that, then it's always going to be fun, surely.
Completely, exactly. Because that's the thing, and I always say this, I genuinely, Craig, I would do this for free. I don't even want the money, genuinely, like, you know...
Don't be saying that to too many people, Callum, please. I want you to become very successful and earn lots of money. I was politely asked to leave my amateur dramatics.
Why?
when I was young. Bit gobby, I questioned a casting decision that I thought was wrong in when they announced they were doing Carousel. So I threw my toys out of the pram and they asked me to leave.
I don't blame you, Craig. I don't even know what it was, but I'm with you.
Yeah. Look, to this day, I'm still stating I'm
right. You were right.
He was far too old to be playing that part.
I love it. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I remember, you know, gosh, I have so many stories, but, you know, there's so many things where I remember auditioning for the Adams Family up by me, and I remember auditioning, and it was a society that I did shows with, and I didn't get the part I really wanted, and I was gutted. But I wish I was gobby, but I'm so bloody, I'm terrible, really. I never can pluck up the courage and speak what I feel. But God, I wish I did, Craig. You know what I mean? But I was gutted.
I mean, I'm much less gobby now. I'm older.
Whatever.
And slightly wiser. A wise person once said to me, choose your battles, and I'll take that with me. and I will learn from that, I promise.
And remember, what is it? What's the saying? Remember the people on the way up, because on your way back down, you're going to need them.
Exactly that. So with there being five sort of local Amdrams in such a small area, did you have to be quite loyal, or could you move around to different ones?
I moved around. I did. I was a slut, to be honest. I moved around. I started in a company called Celsig. I did Oliver. That was my first ever like proper show, and then after that there was the society down the road in Tom Pentre, Act One. They were doing Billy Elliot, so I auditioned for Billy Elliot and I played Billy. All the titular child characters. I played them all.
I've done them all now.
So I played Billy, in Act One then, and I guess I did move around. I think I did stuff for about three of the five societies. I did stuff with, but there's people, Craig, who do shows with all five, and they're the ones you want to be worried about.
So we know that that part of your life was up and running, but school life, were you quite academic? Did you throw yourself into school life as much as you did what you loved as a hobby?
I think, gosh, that's a good question. My mother would give you a different answer to me.
Look, all parents would give a different answer. Well, he could have tried a little bit harder, really, with his maths.
Yeah.
And trust me, I've been doing homeschooling at the moment, so I've been relearning lots of long division, which is
difficult. And Pythagoras' theorem and all that stuff.
It's blowing my mind, you know.
It's too much, Craig.
It's tough to teach a nine-year-old that doesn't really listen. Yeah, it's tough, but let's not go into that. You don't need to worry about that. That's just me.
I give school a good go, right? Academically, I think I was quite able. Like, I was able academically. I just didn't, probably, in terms of, like, my results and my GCSEs, my A-levels, I probably could have got much better results, you know? I did sort of all right. But, you know, having said that, like, I was head boy. So I think I'm quite modest in a way. Like, my GCSEs were fine. Like, I had, like, a few A stars, a few A's and B's and C's, you know. It wasn't all A stars or all A's. It was sort of spread across the board, you know what I mean? So I guess I did all right. I got to stand up for myself and say that I did all right. But I guess I definitely could have done better. Like, if I wanted to go into academics, I probably would have loved to have studied languages. Like, I love the Welsh language, and, you know, I did French for my GCSE, so I think I could have probably done linguistics or, like, done something like that, but who knows? Like, it's interesting, isn't it, when you think of, like, you know, if I didn't act, if I didn't go to drama school, what would I have done? I always used to say I would love to have gone into politics, but I think I'm far too, like, like, thin-skinned for that, to be honest.
Yeah, I you seem far too nice to be going into politics.
I'd be shit, Craig. I'd be terrible. It's because I remember growing up, and, you know, do you remember Neil Kinnock?
I do.
Of course you do, you know, and you know, you remember, you know, when he did that, that speech when he's like, we're all right. And I remember watching that speech and I was like, he's like a rock star by you. But then that speech ruined his whole campaign. That's the irony of it. You know what I mean? So it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I looked up to politicians because I really loved, from a young age, actually, I really loved political dramas. I loved, like, The West Wing and Designated Survivor and all those. So I really enjoyed those shows. So I guess politics was, but I guess, did I want to be a politician or did I want to play a politician? You know what I mean?
Probably the latter. Which I'm sure you'll do at some point. So was the plan, because it sounds to me at the moment, the plan was to be on stage.
Yeah.
Because your basis of your training with amateur dramatics at the moment has been musicals.
Mm, yeah, I wanted to always be on stage, always. I actually never even thought about being basically straight acting, like acting without singing. Do you know what I mean? I always thought it would be musicals all the way. And it was up until I did something with the National Youth Music Theatre, which is like a great organisation, and they do shows in the summer, and I did shows with them. And then
where was that based?
That was based in Sevenoaks in Kent. I had to go there, and that was the first sort of thing I had to go away and do, and it was like, you know, it was like open my eyes into, like, you know, there was loads of people there who wanted to go to drama school, and they were like really good at what they were doing, and they were going to go to Arts Ed, and they were all, oh my gosh, like, even the people, you know, I'm still friends with them all now. They're so talented, like, they're incredible, they're proper triple threats, and I was so intimidated. I was like, they're amazing. So I remember doing that, and that really opened my eyes as an experience, because I was like, this is cool. They want to do it. And I think that, for me, gave me then the hunger to be like, I want to be like them. Do you know what I mean? I want to be as good as they are and do what they are doing. Mm. So I guess the NYMT really opened my eyes. And then I basically, Kate Gollidge, who's a director, she basically then put me up for this job at the chocolate factory in London. To be in She Loves Me at the chocolate factory, and I auditioned for it, and that was my first professional job then, and I got it through the NYMT. So it's
So they kind of act as a conduit, like an agent.
Well, they don't, but Kate was like a contact, I guess. Like she sort of was a fixer in a way, I guess. She has unbelievable amounts of faith in me. Like, clearly, I still can't believe she did it. Like, she was putting herself on the line as well, because she was, you know, I had to do it for her. And I auditioned and I got it. And I guess it was just mad. And I did the show then. I spent 6 months. And this is when I moved to London then, for 6 months.
Right.
I spent sort of near enough half a year in London and just sort of living and learning.
And how old were you then?
I was 16 when I moved, 17 when I finished.
Yeah, wow.
So I was quite young.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, I was also quite young in the head as well. Like, I really look back and I go, I really didn't know a lot. Like, I didn't know how to look after myself, Craig, because you know what I would do? I would do the show, right? I'd do the show, and the show would go up at 8 and it'd go down at 11, and I'd go home. I was working in London Bridge and going home to Sydenham. And I was having a kebab every night after the show. Because I love a kebab. I love a doner kebab. So I remember after every show, I'd have a doner kebab and I'd be like, this is bad. I am going to ruin my insides if I keep doing this. So
I tell you, there are worse things that you can have at 11 o'clock at night than a doner kebab.
Yeah,
I mean, every night, maybe pushing it to an extreme, Callum. But
it would be ridiculous.
One or two a week, I think we can.
I remember getting to the end of the street and I'd be like, should I have it again? Oh, fuck it, I'm going to have another one. And the guy, I went there so much, the guy ended up knocking a pound off every time I went. Oh, he was brilliant. If I go back now, I wonder if he'd still do it.
Proper regular customer.
Oh, yeah, proper
egg. Probably didn't even need... Usual. Yes, please.
Just usual, yeah, every day.
That's when you know you've got a serious problem when the person at the doner kebab shop just...
Yeah.
He's in. Get his usual ready.
Terrible. Oh, it's awful, Craig. But you've got to laugh, haven't you? If you don't laugh, you'll bloody cry.
Absolutely. So after that, that was about 6 months that you were in London.
6 months. I was in London doing the show, and then... So at the same time, I thought I could then not train and then keep acting, right? And I remember speaking to loads of members of the cast, and I remember speaking to, like, you know, the cast had like Les Dennis, Dom Tithe, and there was a boy called Luke Featherston who is the our like dance captain, and he was amazing to me. He was like, he just guided me and helped me, because he was, you know, we were like both the youngest in the cast, but Luke is still a little bit older than me because he's, you know, he was working and had a career and stuff. But Luke was like, go to drama school, go on, get a solid training and then give it a go. You've got plenty of time, you know, you're 17. And I remember just being like, you're right. You're so right. Like, and I really wanted to train. I had a desire to train. I didn't want to just wing it and try and work, because really, Craig, I was just making shapes. I really was. I didn't know how to act. I promise you, I didn't. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to wing it. I'm just trying to do things with my body. So I invited the head of acting at Royal Welsh, Dave Bond, to come to the show, because I'd previously met him through a play I did with National Theatre Connections a few years before. So I said, please come and see the show if you're ever in London. And he came to see the show, and he said, you know, we had a big long conversation. He said, you know, come and audition for the school. And then I auditioned, and then I got in after the show. So then I went and trained then at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama in straight acting. Not in, you know, right, as opposed to musical theatre. And that was a big decision for me, because I was like, because I also got into Arts Ed.
Right.
So for me, I was like, it was a big decision. Arts Ed was a school I'd always dreamed of going to. But, you know, I guess I made that call, I guess. I made that decision. And you know what? I could have gone to Arts Ed, and I think I would have had it I still would have had an amazing time. I don't think I could advise anyone to make the same decision as me, because Arts Ed is a school which has produced the most incredible actors and still does to this day.
So what made you make the decision not to choose a musical theatre course over a quote unquote straight acting course?
I guess I read an article in The Stage. My drama teacher, Mrs. Roblin, she said, you need to go and do straight acting. Do straight acting. Go and do straight acting, because I think it'll serve you better. And so did a man called Tim Rhys Evans, who is the former artistic director of the Allowed charity, so Only Boys Allowed and Only Men Allowed. Tim said, go and do the acting course at Royal Welsh. So I had a lot of people telling me to do that. But also, I trust my gut in all of this. And I just think, for me personally, I'd done musicals all my life, and I'd only done one straight acting play. So I was like, what will I find more of a challenge? Like, what can I do where I'll constantly be in the shit every day? You know, because I basically don't know what I'm doing. So I was like, I'm also alien to it, because I've only done one play. So what will really challenge me every day? And I just thought the acting course will, because I also didn't know how to act. I promise you, I didn't know how to act. So I think going and doing that course at Royal Welsh just really, really helped me basically find truth and sort of authenticity and honesty in my work. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to just going like, you know, making shapes like I did before.
Yeah, but the thing is, because if you look back over your history with all the amateur dramatics and all the musicals that you've done, you'd already started your musical theatre training with that intensity of those performances and those productions over the years and the many, many ones that you've done. So not saying that you knew everything about musical theatre, but certainly I think, and I'm a big believer in gut instincts. I think it'll, you know, if it comes from the gut, it's truthful and it won't let you down. So you do have to trust it. So I think you were right to do that.
Yeah, no, you're bang on. You're absolutely bang on. I think exactly. I didn't know, and I still don't know everything about musical theatre to this day. But also, I'm a massive fan of musical theatre. I love it. I think to go on stage 8 shows a week and work your body to that extent, I'm in awe of musical theatre actors, but also just actors. You know, we're all actors. We've all got to do things to earn a living. And I hope I do a musical again one day, in whatever capacity, whether it's on stage or in a film. I don't bloody know. I'd do it. I'd do anything really. Anyone who loves me, Craig.
Right, stop saying it. I'll do her anything. I'll do it for no money. Stop saying it.
That's it now. I'm never going to earn a penny again, Craig, after this podcast.
I'm going to have to edit a lot of this out, Callum. I'm not letting you go back out into this business. It's not right. And also, the musicals, my God, they work hard. Yeah. It's all, you know, you've got to be fit and healthy doing that 8 shows completely, a week. That's a tough
gig. It is, exactly. So I guess, like, yeah, I just think for me, I'm really happy that I made that call, though. Because I then went to Royal Welsh And I learned so much, not only about acting, about myself. Like, I learned really what is my like taste in things. What do I really enjoy? Mm. Like, what do I enjoy on stage? What do I enjoy on television and film? Like, I started to find like what I enjoy watching, and then therefore what I would like to be in, I guess, what I would love to be in, what sort of stories I'd love to help tell.
Mm.
So I think, I then just fell in love with theatre even more then, I guess, because I was just constantly in awe of going to see plays and illegally streaming plays and shows, and, you know, and also as well, I think it's worth saying that like the line between like theatre and like musical theatre is blurring even like so much more as we go on now. Like, there's so many plays, like, you know, like The Girl from the North Country, like, you know, that, like that, you know, you've got shows like that, and you've got Sally Cookson, who is, and Emma Rice, who are doing these shows where they're sort of pushing the boundaries. They're implementing music into these stories, and it's not really a play, and it's not quite a musical. So it's like, do you know what I mean? I think it's so interesting seeing how I was developing, I guess.
But I think that's really interesting because it's, people, as when you watch powerful pieces of television, people want to be challenged at the theatre a bit more. You know, of course there'll be people who just want to go and see Cats or something sort of, you know, and look, I'm not knocking it, but something nonsensical like that, that's fine. But a great example is Girl from North Country. I mean, that just sort of blew up, and you had all sorts of different theatre goers going to see that. It wasn't just the musical crowd. It wasn't just the people who were heading to the National. It blurs the lines, but it also blurs the audiences going to see it and opens doors for other people.
Completely, absolutely, 100%. And then you can even push it even further, and you got plays like Amadeus. Like, what is that? Is that an opera? Is it a play? Is it an epic story? Like, you know, you had the South Bank Sinfonia on the stage. Like, what is that? Like, that again is like, even still, I don't know what the hell you call that. You can call it a play, but it's not a play, you know, because you've got the South Bank Sinfonia and some of the best classical opera singers in the country on stage. So it's actually, it's interesting, isn't it? It's so cool. I feel like we're living in a time where it's so cool, like the things that are being made, because everything is starting to just blur, and I think that's fucking exciting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a play. No, it's not musical. It's just a true performance. It's a huge, epic performance.
Yeah, completely.
And that is exciting.
It really bloody is. It's amazing. And I guess as well, it's worth saying, Craig, like, I know some good mates of mine and you as Mike Gibson and Caroline Sheen. Those two, I tell you, were... The reason I'm with my agent is because of Mike. Do you know what I mean? Because Mike came to see She Loves Me, and then I signed with my agent through Mike sort of being that link. And, you know, even those two, they're just the most generous, lovely people probably in the world.
Absolute gems, yeah. But that's... We all need a bit of help like that. We all need, you know, an introduction.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's all about. We're trying... A lot of it is... right time, right place, and right look. Because I know so many people who are still slogging away in this profession, and they're fucking brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and do not get a look in about things that they should be doing.
Yeah.
And it's tough. And I say, you know, I say to younger actors all the time, get your suit of armour on, because you're gonna get a bash in, and it's really hard. It's really, really hard. And I was talking to a brilliant actress at the weekend, and we were kind of similar age groups, and we were talking about training and certain things that we weren't told. Like, I was never told how tough it was going to be. And another thing, and what I wanted to ask you about, because I spoke to her about this, and I said I was going to be talking to you, and she said, oh, we'll find out now. Because you've recently been training, I was wondering how much actual... acting for camera stuff they focused on at Royal Welsh, because both myself and this other actress went to different drama schools, but had roughly a couple of hours over the 3 years, pretty much. Wow. Tell me it's changed, Callum.
Yeah, it has. It's completely changed. I did a module every year, so we would have spent what would it be? It'd be like a month of every year on acting for screen. So you'd spend, you know, you'd go in every day and you'd do 4 hours of acting for screen work. And it's really interesting because I hated every single second of it because I was awful at it. I really was awful at it. But I tell you what, God, you know what? Like it like gives me goosebumps because like it's the power of training and it's why it's so fucking important. I was watching my friends act, right? And they were amazing at it. They are all... Mm. My year group was so talented, and they really are. And I was watching them all just be awesome. They would get in front of the camera. They'd do these things with their face, and I'd be like, why can't I do that? I'd be like, why the fuck can't I do that? I'm not doing that. I'm going up, and I'm fucking up shit. You know? But I guess that's part of the training. It's all about watching what your friends do and like you got to aspire even to your peers. You got to look up to even the people you're training with because at the end of the day, they're the people you're entering the industry with. Do you know what I mean? So I think,
yeah.
I think healthy sort of competitivity, is that the word? Competitiveness? I don't know, whatever the word is. I think that's really important.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, you want your peers to be good, or you want the people that you're working opposite to be brilliant.
Yeah.
Because you're only as good as the people that you're working opposite.
Exactly.
And also, you want to be challenged. You want to raise the game.
Completely. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And then out of that, great, you know, hopefully, touch wood, great work will come out of it.
Yeah.
And you'll feel that you've challenged and you've learnt something.
Do I feel like I've learnt something?
No, after that, if you're working with somebody who's amazing, you go, I better step up here.
Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, Greg, I fucking felt it with Neil Patrick Harris. I was literally like, I go from doing acting for screen in college, like, you know, doing really awful stuff in front of the camera to having then being like sort of thrusted in front of Neil Patrick Harris and having to just like watch him be obviously awesome. And I'm just like, oh, God, I don't know what I'm doing. So, yeah, it's true.
So how did you... Because it sounded like from that training, your confidence was surely lacking for acting in front of a camera. So how did you build up your confidence?
I remember, so I did, it was my second year, it was my second year module I remember doing, and we work towards this sort of little, these three scenes you do and you make a little like sort of short film, like it's not a short film, but it's like, you know, just a little show reel thing, and we did it and I just remember watching it and just being completely not happy with it again, and it was my second year of college, I was about to go into my third year. And I still was just like, my acting screen work is shit. It's just awful. It's all just terrible. And I just remember watching then just loads of things. I remember going through a phase of just watching. I'd watched years and years, Russell's show. I'd watched The Crown. I love The Crown. I think Josh O'Connor is a genius. What that boy does in front of camera, he's just a wizard. Like, he's awesome. I remember watching things like Designated Survivor, you know. I remember just watching loads of stuff. And then I also watched loads of Yorgos Lanthimos films and Armando Iannucci. Like, I remember watching Death of Stalin. I just watched so much. I wanted to just immerse myself in loads of things. So I think that, for me, having done really, like, awful work in front of cameras and then going and watching loads of really amazing stuff, I was like, I need to be this fucking good. I want to be this good. I really want to be this good because I need to. Because I just want to because I just want to. You know what I mean? So then out of the blue, this audition came for It's a Sin at the end of my second year. And I think I just really wanted to nail something. I just needed to do something good.
Sorry, so this audition came to you during your second year of training?
Yeah, at the end of my second year. I was doing The Merchant of Venice, a Shakespeare play, so I couldn't meet for it first. Andy Pryor was offering meetings for it, but I couldn't meet for it, so I asked my agent, can I tape for it? And they were like, yeah. Of course, because Andy's really lovely like that. He'll obviously give you the time of day, because he's the best. And I remember, then doing a tape for it, and the tape was something like, there was literally something like six scenes to tape, and I was like, you know, bloody hell, it's a lot, you know what I mean? But I remember I'm so grateful for those six scenes, because I just threw myself in the deep end and just went for it. And I just, you know, it's the first, like I said earlier on, it's the first audition I've ever done where I've just fully just immersed myself. And then I was lucky enough then to get the role, you know, after I went up for a meeting for it and stuff. And I just then felt so passionately about getting it right then, because obviously it was my first, then it wasn't just doing acting for screen work in a studio in college. It was then doing a proper show and a series, and it's a Russell T Davies. And I just wanted to, not just for myself, because that sounds selfish. It was never for myself, actually. It was just for Russell. Like, Russell took a massive leap of faith in me. Like, Russell, Andy Pryor, all the gang, all the creative team, Peter, you know, they took a massive leap of faith in me and they trusted me. So I just wanted to do it for them. I just wanted to prove to them that they'd made the right decision, I guess. Do you know what I mean?
And I bet you were learning on the job as well.
Oh, Craig, every day, I tell you. You know, what the hell is... I remember someone saying, do a banana. What the fuck is a banana? do a banana? That sounds wrong. It sounds awful. Do a bloody banana. So, you know, like... So I was like, you know, you learn every day. You know, you learn what...
Yeah, but that's as precarious as this profession is. Yeah, I think you learn from every single job. You learn something different from everything. And that is... I think that's what keeps people coming back, even when it can be so fucking brutal.
Yeah, yeah. And you've done, you know, you're amazing, Craig. Do you know what I mean? And you've got, I really, you know, I look up to you because you've got bags of experience, do you know what I mean, in all sorts. And I just think it's so interesting you say that, because it's really exciting. Do you know what I mean? It just makes me really excited.
Oh, mate, you're very sweet. But sometimes I feel like I know nothing. Sometimes I'll read a script and I'll go, I have no idea how to approach this. I'm supposed to be a professional here. But that's, you just keep learning. You just keep learning. You dig deep and, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the joy of it, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah, it is. It's so interesting you say that. Because I really enjoy, like, I really enjoy the, like, digging deep bit. Like, because, you know, like, for example, like, you know, in It's a Sin, like, you know, the scenes where you really got to go there. I was shit scared, Craig. I was so scared because I was like, you know, going back to, like, being in She Loves Me and doing, like, shows, you know, you don't have to do any sort of, there's no kind of depth to that. It's always just, you know, making shapes and, like, looking good. And it goes from that then to then being in a scene where you've got to basically, like, you know, think about fucking death. Do you know what I mean? And then, that's, you know, that, do you know what I mean? So you really, you know, so for me, it was just, I was, those scenes, I just remember being shit scared of. Do you know what I mean?
But I think that's healthy to be scared.
Yeah.
Because if we weren't scared or we weren't excited, then what's the point? Mm. What's the point of doing it?
Yeah, it's so true. What were you like? What were you like? What for you is like the scariest thing? Because I'm really curious. Like, what's the most scared like you've been? Like, because you've done some fucking amazing work. Like, what has been the most scared?
I'm still scared now.
Really?
I still get scared all the time. Yeah, of course I do. Because especially now, especially over the past year, where things, for everybody, and I'm not just talking about our profession, haven't been as regular, and certain things have fallen by the wayside. You feel that you get out of practice because you're not sort of on the treadmill of work all the time. So you'll get sent something and you go, oh, I've lost my confidence here. I don't know if I'm going to be able to reach that certain height of what this script needs. Then you start questioning, am I the right person for this? Can I do this? And then you know, the voices in your head start chipping away and you just have to sort of cement yourself and go, no, look, I think I might not be the best person for this job, but I'll certainly give it my best. I'll certainly do the best that I can do. And that's all you can do, you know. I think that's all you can do. I don't know. Every day's a learning day, Callum, to be honest.
Yeah, it's almost like, it's like an athlete, isn't it, though? It's like, it's been a year since we rapped on It to Sin. So doing tapes and auditioning for things, like, I'm just trying to, like, get back into the swing of just, like, knowing my muscles and knowing what I'm doing in front of the camera and all that kind of stuff. And I guess it's similar to, like, football players and you know, athletes. Like, you know, if you haven't done it for a year, you know, you've got to then get back into the swing of just knowing your body and knowing what you're doing. And I like to think of it like that because it's cool, innit, you know? And then when you do it then, like, because Craig, you know, you've done some fucking awesome stuff. Like, then when you do it, you fucking smash it because you're back and you're knowing your stuff and you're in it and I think it matches up again. Do you know what I mean?
But if you get out of the routine, then you're not working that muscle. And if you're not working the muscle, then...
Yeah.
You're just going to get fabby, you know?
Yeah.
You start
to think of kebabs every night.
Yeah, exactly. We're going back to 11 o'clock doner kebabs. I'll just have the one.
Just the one.
Callum, thank you so, so much. I've loved meeting you. This has been an amazing
chat. Oh, you too, you're amazing. You're an absolute legend. And you're a legend in my house. I know me and my father love all your work. And it's really, really, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, no, thank you. And congratulations once again.
Thank you, Craig. You're a legend.
Lots of love, my friend. You take care.
Thank you very much.
And another episode is done. What did I tell you? After I finished recording that episode with Callum, massive shout out to Callum as well. Thank you so much for coming on. You know how much I enjoyed that chat. After finishing recording with Callum, I was walking around the house and I went outside that day for some lovely daily exercise and I had a big, stupid, goofy grin on my face because I just enjoyed that conversation so much. And you just go, don't change. Please, please do not change. And a big shout out to Callum's mum and dad for obviously bringing up such a fantastic boy. I'm sure they're ever so proud of what he's doing. And I've got a feeling we'll be seeing much, much more of Callum. Because you know what? Apart from the fact that he's extraordinarily talented, when you're getting together and you're filming, you want to work, yes, you want to work with brilliant people, but you also want to work with nice people in an ensemble, and they don't come much nicer and more generous than Callum. What a fine man. I hope it's made you smile. I hope it's made you happy. And thanks so much for downloading and subscribing and telling your friends and getting in touch on social media and the emails that we get. You know how much we appreciate them. So, I'm going to go and see all my friends and have a massive party for my birthday. I can't. We're not allowed, are we? But I think I'll go for a little walk with my umbrella and speak to a few people on the phone. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So, until next week. Next week, we're going back to Wales with another guest. I'll see you next week for that. Until then, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast. You take care of yourself, all right? And you know what?
if you're feeling a bit down in a week, just re-listen to this episode. It's guaranteed to cheer you up. You take care. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.